This is The People's Game. I'm Alan Minsky.
I'm Jennifer Doyle.
And I'm Pablo Morales.
And we're joined now by Lazar Trishan. He has a great blog called No More Onion Bags, where recently it's been very focused upon the Uruguayan national team, of which he is a partisan. Congratulations on the victory today, Lazar.
Thank you so much. They're dancing in the streets in Montevideo.
Have you had a chance to look at the Uruguayan media and see what they're saying?
They're thrilled. They're thrilled.
Surprise.
Really?
The Uruguayans are always find a way to be critical, and there was stuff to criticize today, but I think when you take a step back and realize that we're in the top 8 teams in the world, we have a reason to be happy.
When they were doing the national anthems and they were panning the Uruguayan team, it's like, these are very serious people.
Yeah.
That was my thought. That's an intense group of guys. You know,
Yeah, well, that song, too, you know, it's sort of like a very old classic national anthem with a lot of flourishes. So it plays well to the sense of drama. And Uruguayan, like nothing else than a sense of drama. I think theater is one of the big things in Uruguay. And we express it in every part of the culture.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the game today, because obviously first headline, I suppose, is Suarez really had his big coming out party today. Forlan was the star in the group stage. Suarez, just this was his day.
Yeah, and it's great for Luisito. You know, that first goal, I think each goal showed something different about him. The first goal just showed intelligence. Uruguay got lucky on it, but he used his head and realized that there was some confusion happening in the back of Korea, and he took his chance, and he gambled, and he got it right. And then the second goal, I think, was just pure technical quality.
Yeah, that second goal was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, he really kept his head, and, you know, it was pouring rain, and he just threaded it, right? I mean, it was a really fantastic and expert shot, and I think probably the best goal, most beautiful goal of the tournament so far, likely to be one of the best of the tournament when we get to the end. I thought it was just brilliant. A number of people were sort of kind of commenting that they played an ugly game or a conservative game, or, you know, and I actually think that's a little bit unfair. I think that you can only say that if you don't appreciate the art of defending. And they were 4 periods in the game playing just absolutely amazing, amazing defense. And you had this strange, almost surreal period where Korea seemed to have the ball forever, forever. And it didn't mean a thing. I mean, it just didn't mean a thing. And I think I can see why people say that wasn't sort of fun to watch. But I found it really interesting. I thought it was sort of a little bit of cat and mouse, you know, just sort of batting them around before finishing them off. I mean, anyway, I just thought I liked today's game for Uruguay. And it made me think that we might see them go pretty far.
I see what you're saying. It was a little tough to see Uruguay give the ball to Korea for that long. It was one thing against Mexico where we scored and gave them the ball because a tie would have gotten us through top of the group. Here, a goal was a problem, so we gave them the ball for an hour, and then they scored, and then we said, okay, now we're going to score again. As a nonpartisan, I could probably see how someone would analyze, well, you know, Uruguay wasn't going to pressure unless they needed to, and then once they needed to, they got a second goal. But, you know, for me, it was a slightly schizophrenic performance. Yeah. I would have liked them to have gotten the second goal before Korea scored, but Uruguay, to be a fan of Uruguayan soccer is to know suffering and make us suffer a little.
Yeah, I guess that's that sense of drama being played out there with sort of drawing that period out for as long as possible. And then, you know, what thrilled me was the way they just turned it around. I mean, South Korea scored, and then it was just a moment of transition, right, where very quickly on the attack, the next thing you knew, Suarez was in front of the goal, and it was in the back of the net. It was really astonishing. And I kind of think that sometimes the stronger teams have that ability to recover, and also a little bit of, I don't want to say it's a cynicism exactly, but they'll hold back a bit with a kind of, you have the sense of there being a plan. And that's how I felt when I was watching it, that actually Uruguay had a plan, even when they weren't in possession of the ball, which is not a bad effect, so speaking dramatically.
Lazar, I have a question about the guys on the team. My sense of them is that they're a really unified squad now. So two questions. We know now about Suarez. We all know Forlan's background. The other guys out on the field, only a few of them have somewhat high profiles in global football. They're all consummate professionals is what they strike me as. And why does this team seem to have such a strategic and coherent unity, whereas it just is not true of so many teams, including teams with great national soccer cultures?
You know, that's a really interesting question that a lot of Uruguayans are talking about, because you know, even countries like England, okay, they don't all play on the same team, but at least they all play in the same country and see each other. Uruguayans are spread all over the world. I mean, a couple players in Portugal, in Spain. There's a guy who plays in Uruguay, Argentina, Turkey. But the Uruguayan team really is willing to play together and understand each other and suffer for one another. And I think it comes down to the coach. I mean, the coach, Washington Tavares, is someone that the players really respect. He knows how to combine. He has a quote on his wall from Che Guevara, which is, I believe that, you know, in toughness combined with love, that you need to be tough, but you need to combine it with tenderness. And I think the players respect him as a human being, which you really don't see in every team out there this year. And that because of that, because of his experience and that he's able to bring them together, they're willing to sort of listen to his plan. And I think you're right. He does put out a plan for each portion of the game, not even for the whole game. For a portion of the game, they score, he changes the plan, and they're willing to trust him. And trust goes a long way.
Well, he's a great coach. I mean, as a Boca Juniors fan, I remember when he came over and Boca hadn't won a championship in, I don't know, almost a decade, and then he showed up and just created one of the great Boca sides and took them to two or three straight championships. And so there's a special place in my heart for Tavares.
Yeah, and he's had success in different places. You know, he had success in Argentina, in Uruguay. He took us to the World Cup, the last World Cup, and we passed out of the group stage, which was in 1990. He did very well for Cagliari in Italy. And he even went on to coach Milan in Italy. So I think that has engendered a little respect. And, you know, trust goes a long way because, you know, I think we've seen that not every team is willing to suffer in this World Cup. And it's the teams that are willing to suffer for one another and trust their coach that are getting farther.
Well, now you live in New York, and I'll have a question for you about being in New York City today in a second. So while it won't be a situation where Uruguay is playing USA, they will be playing Ghana, which is really more significant. They'll now be playing the one side with a significant sort of home field advantage in the World Cup. While it's true that there probably are not many fans from Ghana who will be at the match, one can expect that much of the South African press will be highly attentive to Ghana and the international press will be attentive to Ghana. So there's going to be a lot of hype now around their next match and their next opponent. How do you see that possibly affecting the side? And the other question I have for you about the side is the one weakness I see is they seem to fatigue a little bit, Uruguay. That was the only thing because I think they're really rock solid, but I feel like if they go past 90 minutes, they're going to be very vulnerable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought today, actually, we saw the fatigue. Even Diego Forlan, who is a horse, was beat. I mean, he was walking a lot of the game. With Ghana, it's interesting. A couple things. I mean, Uruguay now is playing with house money. I think the goal is to get to the quarters. So once you're playing with house money, once you've gone to the quarters and you come home a success story regardless, you're willing to just go for it. So I think that plays in their favor. I think against Ghana, you know, we played against South Africa and took them apart at home.
Right.
So I don't think playing an African team will be a trouble. But in 1997, Uruguay came in second in the under-21 championship World Cup in Malaysia, and we beat Ghana in the semifinals. And the older Uruguayans on this team are the same players as the older Ghanaians on this team. Your Steven Appiahs and Sully Mukhtari, I believe, were on that team. So these guys know each other because they played a very tough match many years ago. So, you know, there's that there. We're playing with house money. And once you've gotten farther than you think you're going to get, you're not playing with fear anymore. So more than ever, I think we're just going to go for it and have some fun. And when players have fun is when you really see the best of them.
One final question, not really related to the Uruguayan team, but you're in New York City is where we're speaking to you. What was the scene around the second match there? Obviously, you're sky high, but was there a lot of hype around the United States game, and where did you watch the second game?
Yeah, I mean, every place, every bar in Brooklyn where I live was packed. I threw off my light blue Uruguayan shirt and put on my light blue 1997 USA jersey, 1995 USA jersey, and, you know, packed into a bar. And it was great to see. You know, it's great to see people coming out and supporting the U.S. You know, people don't still completely know how to cheer. They get really quiet after the opposition scores, which is when you need to cheer less because that's when your team needs the most. But, you know, people were out there and excited, and I'm very proud of the U.S. I mean, this is a team that this is the best USA team that I've ever seen, and I think they can leave with their heads held high.
beautiful background ambiance of Brooklyn there.
New York City sound.
That's right.
Yeah. One of these days, we're going to have everybody singing You'll Never Walk Alone.
Lazar Trishan's great blog is nomoreonionbags.com. Thank you so much for joining us on The People's Game, and you can be assured we'll be talking to you again in a few days.
My pleasure. Vamos away.
And that's our show for today. I'm Alan Minsky, and I want to thank Jennifer Doyle, Pablo Morales, and our guests, Nick Green, Dave Zirin, and Lazar Trishan. Tune in again tomorrow for The People's Game.